Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of February 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer of the Andersons Everly, Iowa facility will join us from the northwestern part of that state to take a look at the cash grain market. We'll discuss the weather forecast, too, that with AgriBulls Eric Snodgrass. And we'll take that weather up in a bit more detail as it may reflect what potential there is for premium to be added to the marketplace with Darrell Good, at least as it relates to the price of corn. And it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. Unchanged for the March. Corn at $3.65.5. May at $3.69.25. Down a half. July unchanged. It settled $3.73.75. December unchanged as well. That's the new crop at $3.86.5 for the day. Soy complex. March beans at $8.78.25. Down a penny and a half. The May down two at $8.80.75 of a cent. In July, $8.85.25. Down two and a quarter. November beans $8.88.5. Down 2 cents. Bean meal futures at $2.64.50, a dollar higher. Bean oil 44 cents lower at $31.39. March wheat futures a half lower at $4.61.75. July settled $4.74. The soft red down a penny and a half in its harvest month. The hard red up three and a quarter at $4.76.5. Live cattle futures currently trading up 60 cents at $135.75 after the release of the cattle on feed report at 2 o'clock. We'll hear more about those numbers here momentarily. $134.40 is the trade in the April, up 2.5 cents. March feeder cattle 47.5 lower at 156, and April at 154.75 are 75 cents lower at this hour. Here what some of the other numbers are trading like. The energies, ethanol futures at $1.41, they're up a penny and 4 tenths of a cent. Crude oil at $29.63 is down $1.15 a barrel, and the price of gasoline at 95.9 cents of a cent is a penny and 3 tenths of a cent lower. Heating oil at that's diesel fuel, a nickel and 2 tenths of a cent lower at $1.02.07 of a cent. Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour at 16,324 is down 67 points. You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For 100 years, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Hey, have you purchased your tickets for the All-Day Agricultural Outlook? That's coming up on the 8th day of March over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Your $30 ticket buys you access to a dozen of our regular on-air analyst and four more extra folks for a day-long event, and you get your midday noon meal from the Beef House, a roll and coffee in the morning too, all for just $30. You can do it online right now at willag.org or at 800-898-1065. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon as it comes from the Urbana National Weather Service. Sunny skies and 66 degrees today. Winds out of the west at 22 to 32. Tonight, mostly clear, low of 41. Tomorrow, sunny, a high of 63. And Saturday night, a 40% chance of showers, partly cloudy, low of 39 degrees. West-southwest winds at 5 to 7. Sunday, partly sunny, a high of 54. Northwest winds at 7 to 10. And on Sunday night, mostly cloudy, a low of 31 degrees. On Monday, partly sunny to start the work week and 44 degrees. We'll go to 45 under partly sunny skies on Tuesday and Wednesday, partly sunny and 43. Thursday of next week, still partly sunny skies, a high of 43 degrees. And then we begin to dip down a bit lower. We'll talk more about the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour with Eric Snodgrass. He's from AgriBull. You're here on Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support of the Friends of WILL and Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Have you picked up your tickets? I hope so, for the all-day agricultural outlook at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. If not, you can call this number, 800-898-1065. That's 898-1065, 1065-898-1065, or just go online. It's probably easier to do that at willag.org. You can fill it all out, and we'll mail the tickets right to you. You've got just a couple of weeks to get all that done, so do it right now. The all-day ag outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have a dozen of our regular on-air analysts. A couple of guys are coming a long ways to be with you on that day, so it's important that you be there. Dan Zwicker will be in from Waco, Texas, and Mike Zuzulo will be in from Atchison, Kansas. He joins us now. Hey, Mike, thanks so much.
Great to be with you. Maybe I'll ask Dan if we can carpool.
Well, you can carpool. Hey, you know what? You can carpool, because while you don't know this, Dan's going to be in the week earlier, too. So he's going to be with us both in Sherman, Mike, where you will be on the evening of March the 1st at the Farm Credit Illinois building. And then he'll be with us also in Litchfield the next day, too, at the Lincoln Land Community College building. That one's a fundraiser for the hospital there in Litchfield. But so we'll have him a couple of days. For those who are a little farther away, they don't have to come quite all the way over to the Beef House. But, gosh, we'll be able to carpool a little bit on a couple of those days. I'm kind of looking forward to having you and Dan here in the great state of Illinois.
That'll be fantastic. Maybe he and I can each do our barbecue recipes, and then you can taste them and be the judge. And
Texas barbecue and Kansas barbecue. Gotcha. That'll be good. Speaking of barbecue, this is a bad transition, Mike, but the cattle on feed report came out this afternoon. What did it show us?
Well, I think you didn't do any favors to a very defensive close this week. We've had the cash demand suffering a bit here because we are now in Lent, and so the red meat demand does seasonally go down. Packers have been more eager to buy pork at this stage for what red meat they do buy. We also had a very disappointing week in export sales. Marketing year low reported this morning, so we are coming into this report limping. I specifically didn't like the placements number at 99%, because at face value that doesn't look too bad, but all categories were up 3-4% by weight breakdown, except for the less than 600 pound numbers. They came in at 83%, or down about 17% from last year, and that's what helped us keep the placements below 100%. Had it not been for that, we would have had a big increase in placements. So a lot of heavy cattle got placed this past month, and I think we're going to probably have a difficult time without a real surge in cash with the market being able to hold these levels that we closed at last week.
How did the market in Chicago take it? They're still trading, though I don't have real-time numbers. Mostly I don't need them in the afternoon at this time. What's trade look like at this point?
Yeah, clearly didn't like the feeders didn't like it more than anything, and that makes sense because the placements got April feeders down about 75, March down about 50, while the fat cattle are staying up about 2 cents in the April contract.
All right, now let's turn our attention to the other marketplaces. I don't think I've seen so many unchanged numbers in the corn for, I don't know, a decade or so. By the March and the July, September, December, March contract of next year, all unchanged. Kind of a quiet day there.
It was. I don't want to say it was disappointing, but like we talked about this morning, I wish we could have done more with the corn export sales and also the fresh sales and the Indian tender and also several other things that happened this week that I thought were pretty beneficial to the corn market. But we had that 4% lower trade in the crude oil weighing on us. And I think we also had probably a lot of spread trading going on. And traders were very eager to buy and sell up or down one or two. And I think that may be because the March options all expired. I noted that March 370 calls and puts, March 380 calls and puts still had, 24,000 contracts of open interest still as of yesterday's close in them. And so had a lot of options hanging out there and probably kept the market very evenly matched. So couldn't get any traction probably as a result of that, especially the last hour of trade.
Since you mentioned options, we talk about them from time to time on the air. Some of our brokers have been discussing options and the lack of volatility, which makes them relatively cheap. Have you been thinking about options as it refers to either old crop or new crop grains and oilseeds?
Yeah, in fact, in the presentations that I've been doing this winter, the very last slide I show as far as trying to keep your money in your pocket as much as possible with these tight margins, maybe one of the smartest things to look at and certainly keep track of is buying back corn if you see the potential that you're not going to be able to fulfill some of the cash contracts, these specialty contracts out there that elevators are recommending at this point, where if you go above a certain price in December corn, the number of bushels that you committed actually doubles. And nothing wrong with that per se, but you have to realize that the biggest likelihood why your contract would get above that price and those numbers would double is because you probably have a weather threat and a supply threat on your hands. So you want to be monetarily prepared to defend those sales if you would be able to, if you would happen to get into that double sales type of atmosphere. And so I think this is where the low volatility options. Volatility is just like flat price. You want to buy low volatility and sell high volatility because the volatility makes a lot of difference in the premium. So this may be an area where if you think that there's a possibility of La Nina or a weather play in July or August, re-owning some of the corn sales you put on the books relatively early in the year, especially if you lower your crop insurance coverage, it may be something to look at. I'm not recommending the lowering your crop insurance coverage, just trying to navigate these seas that we were talking about earlier today.
Yeah, so in this case, you would be buying a call option, correct?
Yeah, because you would theoretically want to be buying low volatility. Yeah. You typically don't want to buy high volatility because you're just paying a lot to the market. And, my experience has been options that expire worthlessly, which is a large percentage of the time, is usually because you're not right relatively quickly in terms of the time and also because you didn't realize how high a volatility that option was when you purchased it.
And one point of clarification, those who are looking at this, they want to buy a call option, or which would give you that kind of upside, opening it up if you've already got some sales on the books, but you'd only be risking whatever it is your purchase price for that call was. You do not want to write a call option, which is taking the other side of that call option, and that's much more like taking a futures position, so there is a difference.
Excellent point. Like right now, a December 450 corn call last trade is just around 12 and a half cents, and that seems extremely low, historically speaking, in my opinion, when you're talking about something that's, roughly 60 cents, 65 cents out of the money. That seems very low, in my opinion. Back last year in the month of September, when we had a rally or when we had more time value in it, that option was worth about 25, 26 cents. So you can kind of get an idea of what the volatility and the flat price have done to these premiums.
Hey, looking forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Same here, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. He'll be in the state on the 1st and 2nd of March for a couple of our Ag Outlook panels. They're in Sherman, Illinois, and Farm Credit Building, and in Litchfield at the Lincoln Land Community College building there. And then, of course, for our all-day Ag Outlook, which you can buy your tickets for right now at willag.org. In today's agricultural news, an American Farm Bureau Federation official says President Obama's decision to go to Cuba next month will draw more attention to the U.S. embargo. AFBF trade advisor Dave Samuelson says the effort today is all about ending the now decades-old trade embargo.
I think the visit by the president to Cuba will draw more attention to the issue. Certainly elevates the whole issue of relations with Cuba. I think mostly it's on a political level, but draws attention also to the fact that the embargo continues. And it's something that we know really needs to be addressed if we're going to have full trade relations with Cuba.
Bipartisan bills to end the embargo have gone nowhere. That in the face of opposition from mostly Cuban-American lawmakers. The Treasury Department has lifted cash in advance restrictions on agricultural sales to Cuba and agricultural equipment. Seeds and food processing are now exempt from financing restrictions. But Farm Bureau argues it's not enough and that only ending the embargo will make a real difference in farm sales to Cuba. We'll stay in Washington, D.C., where the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia may be a major victory on water law for the Obama administration. Politico reports Scalia was the foremost critic of federal wetlands regulations who helped move the court away from an expansive interpretation of the law. With a divided court, 4-4, following his passing, the court could leave lower court rulings standing or simply avoid making the decisions. The controversial Waters of the United States rule, for example, is working its way through the courts, but cases regarding the rule likely won't reach the high court until 2017 at the soonest, when a Scalia successor may already be named. However, there is a chance the high court would be asked to appeal a technical ruling from the Sixth Circuit sooner, sometime, maybe even later this year. Well, the House Ways and Means Committee ranking Democrat Sander Levin of Michigan said Thursday the Trans-Pacific Partnership falls short of an acceptable outcome. He cited four areas where the agreement failed to make improvements. Those issues for him include workers' rights, rules of origin for automobile parts, currency manipulation, and the investment chapter that he claims endangers U.S. law on the environment and health. The 12-member nation pact that includes the United States represents nearly 40% of global gross domestic product, or GDP. Well, Cargill has announced the company will stop selling seed, fertilizer, and crop chemicals to farmers in the Black Sea region. Cargill says exiting the business will impact about 180 employees. And finally today, this from Iowa, where Governor Terry Branstad is proposing an extension of a school infrastructure sales tax to generate funds for water quality. The 1 cent sales tax over 32 years would make about $21 billion available for school infrastructure and nearly $5 billion for water quality. Speaking at the Iowa Soybean Association's agricultural meeting this week, Governor Branstad said the funding level would meet the requirements of the state's nutrient reduction strategy.
The neat thing about it is it does it with the 1 cent sales tax that we already have. So it doesn't raise taxes, and it provides significant money for school infrastructure and also a reliable ongoing source of funding for water quality. We've developed, I think, a very good nutrient reduction strategy. The challenge is having enough resources to pay for all the cost sharing and all the other investments that need to go into making that happen.
The Iowa House Agriculture Committee passed the bill Wednesday, and it now advances to the Iowa House Ways and Means Committee. Some see Branstad's proposal as pitting education versus water quality. However, the governor says the plan would not reduce the current funding level for Iowa schools. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. A nearby corn futures remain above the early January lows, but they continue to struggle under the weight of a number of negative market fundamental factors. Those factors include both supply and demand considerations. On the supply side, domestic corn production has been large for three consecutive years, and the USDA now projects 2015-16 marketing year ending stocks of U.S. corn at a 10-year high. And while those stocks represent a modest 13.6% of projected marketing year consumption, they are considered ample in light of prospects for another large South American harvest and projected foreign year-ending stocks of coarse grains that are nearly 40% larger than the stocks of 3 years ago, so writes University of Illinois agricultural economist Daryl Good on the Farm Doc Daily website. Now, Good says demand for U.S. corn has been weakened by sluggish domestic and global economic growth, among other factors.
In addition, growth in domestic corn consumption is limited by plateauing ethanol production, slow growth in livestock and poultry production, and weak livestock prices.
With corn demand prospects not expected to markedly improve in the near term, price strength will likely have to come from the supply side, says Good. The primary focus will be on the prospective size of the 2016 U.S. corn crop. The first indication of the potential size of that crop will come with USDA's prospective plantings report. It'll be released on the 31st of March. And while the final estimate of planted acreage of corn has often deviated from the estimate of planted intentions, he says that report will provide some very useful information. However, ultimately, Good says, the size of the 2016 corn crop will be largely determined by summer weather and the resulting U.S. average corn yield.
Historically, the corn market was inclined to build some production risk into the price structure as the planting and growing season began. The tendency for the corn market to reflect a risk premium was associated with the wide swings in yields experienced from the mid-1970s through the mid-1990s. The pattern of corn yields over the past 20 years differed dramatically from the pattern of the previous 22 years, and the average yield below trend in only 4 years. That extended period of good corn yield seemed to convince the corn market that an early season risk premium was unnecessary.
In retrospect, however, the long period of favorable yield reflected a period of benign weather conditions rather than bulletproof genetics, thanks Darrell Good. And he says that point was solidly made during the drought of 2012. Oh, and he says there are two developments that may point to an elevated risk for the U.S. average corn yield to fall below trend value this season, too.
First is the weakening of the current El Nino event. Historically, El Nino events that existed in January and ended by July, as is expected this year, have been associated with a higher than average incidence of corn yields falling below trend value. Second is the historical record for extremely wet conditions in the Midwest during November and December to be followed by a higher than average incidence of corn yields below trend value.
In fact, total November-December precipitation in the Midwest in 2015 was record high. So the price of new crop corn futures are currently above the price of old crop corn futures, but are at relatively low levels and likely reflect little premium for production risk in 2016. Some additional risk premium may be justified, says Darrell Good, and depending on the magnitude of acreage, a 2016 corn yield 8 to 10 bushels below trend could alter the balance sheet from one of surplus to one requiring rationing.
For the Illinois State Water Survey, this is State Climatologist Jim Angel. February temperatures are running just above average for this time of year. If you look at the water content of the rain and snow, we are just slightly below average with only 0.7 inches of precipitation. However, snowfall has been widespread, but only 3 to 4 inches across the state. The National Weather Service came out with their monthly and seasonal forecast this week. El Nino is still the biggest factor and will be for the next few months before fading away. The outlook for March shows an increased chance of being drier than average. The outlook for March, April, and May shows an increased chance of being both warmer and drier than average. Right now, that forecast is no cause for concern since we have adequate soil moisture, and a warmer, drier spring might mean earlier field work. The outlook for June, July, and August is for an increased chance of being both warmer than average with near-average precipitation. In fact, they've taken out the earlier prediction for drier conditions this summer, and now they're not leaning one way or the other on the summer rainfall, which is probably a wise thing. In the short term, we should see milder temperatures this week, and especially on Saturday, and on through the rest of February. The next 2 weeks look to be dry with no organized storm systems until possibly next weekend. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist for the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Chocolate Mint Day. The creator of the day is lost in history, but it was most likely started by a candy maker or ice cream company. On this day in agricultural history in 1764, Gottlieb Sigmund Kirchhoff was born. He discovered glucose, developed a method for refining vegetable oil, and also experimented with brewing and fermentation. In 1855, the bread riots in Liverpool began. In many cases, after cleaning out the shops, they broke windows and smashed furniture. In Tsingtao, China, the first brewery was founded by German settlers in 1903. In 1906, the Battle Creek Toasted Corn Flake Company was founded by Will Keith Kellogg to manufacture breakfast cereals. The founding of the company was an outgrowth of practices based on the Seventh-day Adventist religion at the Battle Creek Sanitarium. The company produced and marketed the hugely successful Kellogg's Toasted Corn Flakes and was renamed the Kellogg Company in 1922. In 1912, on this date, Cracker Jack began to put prizes in each box. 3 years earlier, the song Take Me Out to the Ball Game was written by Jack Northworth on a 30-minute subway ride. The confection became a part of Americana with the third line of the song, Buy Me Some Peanuts and Cracker Jack. And in 1985, Cherry Coke was introduced. Actually, soda fountains, remember those? Have been making them for decades. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Time to check the weather forecast with Eric Snodgrass. Hey, Eric, it's really windy.
Yeah, certainly. And it all kind of got started yesterday out in the Great Plains. We basically had red flag warnings, which kind of indicates the risk for fires across a big chunk of like Oklahoma and Texas and Nebraska and Kansas. In fact, yesterday some fires broke out that were really fueled by these winds. And it was amazing. We could actually see the smoke plumes on satellite. We could see them on radar. Big, big fires for this time of year. And basically that wind's pushed east. And there's a large low pressure system that's kind of hanging out in Wisconsin. And the contrast between that low pressure system and relatively high air pressure out east is producing what we call a big pressure gradient. And what that results in is these winds. We've got sustained winds, 25 to 35 knots right now. So we're talking winds that are over 30 miles an hour and gusting at times well over 40. And that's prompted high wind warnings and high wind advisories across a huge part of the Corn Belt. But you know, when we get these kind of winds in this time of year, and if they're coming from the south, we get warm. And that's really where this is all transitioning, is that, you know, today on this Friday here, us here in central Illinois, we're pushing records. The record high temperature for today in Champaign is 68 degrees, and we are blasting through the 60s already, and we're heading on up to potentially a record high for this day, kind of historically in this part of the world. And the good news is even though it's really windy today and warm, it looks like getting into tomorrow, we're going to continue with the warmth, but the winds are going to calm down a little bit. So honestly, you know, the rest of the weekend looks to be one of these decent weekends that we kind of just get lucky with in February. And about the only thing you have to deal with is a chance for some rain. Looks like there's a chance of rain that's going to be coming in Saturday night and a Sunday morning. But that's, you know, that's really it in terms of kind of, you know, precipitation, at least in the short term.
And do we keep these warmer temperatures relatively, or maybe moderate temperatures through the week? And what happens by the time we get to next weekend?
Yeah, sure. So about the time I'm calling you next week, and I think we'll be talking about much cooler weather again. Like we've been talking about, we've been on this roller coaster ride of temperatures. And so after Sunday, we're going to expect to cool back down to more seasonable temperatures for the end of February. So we're talking low 40s as highs. But it looks like in the long-range model forecast, there's a push for some cold air again getting into next week. And got to keep an eye on it. It'll move around and it'll change in magnitude a little bit, but we're watching another cold push. But between now and then, we kind of settle back down in the Midwest. We actually don't really have that wet of a upcoming week. In fact, most of the Corn Belt in the Midwest stays relatively dry. That's not the case down south and along the East Coast, and it's certainly not the case along the coastal Pacific Northwest. But yeah, we kind of settle back down into what February should be after this really nice warm-up for the weekend. So, you know, that's what we're at least looking at in the short term. And I'll tell you this, I am watching very closely in the much longer term a very active weather pattern setting up. So we'll keep you up to date on what's going on there, and I'll definitely tell you about that in the next week's forecast.
Before we let you go, we better check in on the growing regions of South America.
Certainly. One of the things we're concerned about this week is the heat that's in southern Brazil and really the pampas of Argentina. You know, regardless of the stresses, right now what we've already seen being harvested from northern parts of Brazil, the projections are still for probably the largest crop coming out of Brazil historically. So that happens when you plant an extra 3 to 4%, you know, more acres every year. So expecting a big crop out of Brazil, a story we've kind of been telling all season long.
Thanks so much, Eric.
Yeah.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agribull from right here in Urbana-Champaign. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, and that wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is up next.